Crom had just made a bell curve. The dwarf continued speaking and pointed at the line between average and above average.
A novice-smith would start here, your lordship. They would have a large chance making an average or above-average quality item.
He pointed to either end of the bell's curve.
And a smaller chance of making a poor-quality or well-crafted quality piece.
In that scenario, is it a 34% chance to make the average or the above-average weapon? Richter asked. Crom looked at him in surprise.
Not exactly, your lordship. I was never too interested in the specific percentages of me craft, but me old master said the chances of making the lower quality was closer to 55%, and to make the higher quality was about 35% when you first achieved a new rank. When you move another quality level over either way, it'd be 3 times as likely to make a lower quality piece than higher quality. Also, the chances to forge higher quality items do improve when your skill gets closer to the next rank. This'll be the broad rules, though, your lordship, because luck, ingot quality, and other factors would affect the numbers somewhat.
Richter nodded. So not a standard bell curve, more like a negative skew. He did some quick math in his head and realized that meant there was probably about a 7 to 8% chance to make a much lower quality weapon, and only a 2 to 3% chance to make a much higher quality weapon. He was fascinated. It had never occurred to him that the smithing skill would be so intricate and complex. He motioned for Crom to continue.
At me journeyman rank, the middle of me curve be here.
He drew another bell curve that was centered over the line between exceptional and superb.
If everything turns out near perfect, I might make an exquisite piece, but the best I can normally hope to make be a superb quality weapon. Like I said, though, there'd be a penalty for working metal a rank above me ability. Anything I make would automatically drop 1 quality level, and I might not be able to use it at all. In normal circumstances, the best elementum blade I should be able to forge would be superb quality.
Richter examined the blade again, seeing that it had exquisite quality, 1 full rank higher.
Then how— The forge! Crom interrupted excitedly. All of the elementum ingots you brought back were masterwork quality, which made forging them easier. That helped a lot. I poured all of me energy and sweat into it, and I made the best blade that I could. I swear, your lordship, I felt like me hammer was being guided to exactly the right spots. The metal was like me third wife, hot as hell and just might burn ya, but always ready for a pounding. When I finished the blade, I knew that it was exquisite, but of course the rank penalty knocked it down to superb. Then the main anvil started to glow. The light shot into the sword, and when I looked again, the quality was back to exquisite. I can only take part of the credit for this fine weapon, your lordship.
Richter laughed. Crom was almost dancing a jig. The smith calmed himself and went on to explain the magic imbued into the blade.
Now, the enchantment be a bit modest for so fine a weapon, but it'd still be better than nothing. The elf was working with me all morning, and he managed to unlock the 2nd rank of freeze.
The Chaos Seed's eyebrows shot up. That was amazing news. The Forge of Heavens had a spectacular ability to learn any enchantment from magic weapons or armor that it came in contact with. Most enchanters in the land apparently only knew a few enchantments, and even those were jealously guarded. To be able to learn dozens, if not hundreds, was like hitting the enchanter lotto. It still took work, however. Any known enchantment had a rank to go along with it. Simply put, higher-ranked enchantments were stronger. When an enchantment was learned by the Forge, they all started at rank 1. Freeze, for instance, initially gave a +1 water damage and a 2% chance to actually freeze a struck enemy in place. In normal circumstances, an enchanter learned an enchantment at a specific rank. If a master taught their student rank 3 of fire damage, for instance, the student would be able to enchant up to that rank. Only by lengthy and sometimes dangerous experimentation, however, would they be able to advance the enchantment up to the 4th rank and beyond. Something else that made the Forge of Heavens so valuable
was that merely by practicing an enchanter could learn higher ranks. While adding plus one damage to a weapon was nothing to sneeze at, if the 10th rank of an enchantment could be unlocked, it would make the weapon truly dangerous. As pleased as Richter was with Glorin's initiative, it was the dwarf that truly captured his attention. He had always been impressed by Crom's dedication to his craft, but normally, the only other time the taciturn dwarf spoke passionately was when he was cursing someone. Hearing him grow downright loquacious when he talked about making weapons and armor brought a smile to Richter's face. Okay, so I get the high damage and the freeze enchantment, but what about the bonus trait? Why is it stronger against dark and earth creatures? Crom looked around at the forge with what could only be called love in his eye.
That be thanks to Rhea here.
Rhea? Richter asked.
Aye, your lordship. The forge reminds me of the first love I ever had. A strong beauty of a woman who would happily burn your nuts off if you didn't pay attention the whole time you were with her. She also let me come inside whenever I pleased.
Crom looked around at the forge with a wistful smile. Inside of her house? Crom's bearded grin only deepened. Richter looked at his smith with a slightly scrunched face. This seemed inappropriate somehow, and how many true loves and wives had Crom been through? The silence grew somewhat uncomfortable as the two men just stood there, Richter holding the short sword and the dwarf looking off in the distance. When Crom started audibly and breathily sighing, however, Richter couldn't take it anymore.
Dude! What? Oh, yes. Sorry, your lordship. Went somewhere for a bit. As I was saying, when I finished forging the sword, the sun and one of the moons glowed on the ceiling. A beam of nearly clear green light came down from the moon, and a beam of yellow-white shot down from the sun. They both met on the anvil and bathed the sword in a bright glow. When it went out, the sword had the bonus trait, and that be when the mark appeared.
What mark? Richter asked.
At the base, your lordship.
Richter looked closely at where the blade met the hilt and saw the slight impression of a four-pointed star. As he watched, it glowed slightly before resuming the appearance of clear green glass. Richter turned the blade over and saw another impression. It was a square with four characters, one in each quadrant.
That be me smith mark, your lordship. It let all know that the weapon was forged by Crom of the Redstone Clan, the dwarf said proudly.
So do all of the weapons you've made here have this glowing star? Richter asked.
So far, it only be this one. I do believe the mark only appears when the sealing be triggered to grant extra powers.
Richter was pleased to know that the special quality of the Forge of Heavens had already come into play. The extra damage could make all the difference, especially in the catacombs. And so far only my sword has gotten this kind of special bonus trait?
Aye, your lordship. I was actually thinking that if we knew more about when the moons and stars would be present overhead, we might be able to get more of these special bonuses. Could you figure that out?
You have been offered a quest. My God, it's full of stars. One. Crom has tasked you with learning more about the movement of celestial bodies. How you do this is up to you. Will you accept? Yes or no? Reward, improved weapons and armor. After the morning he'd had, Richter had almost expected Crom to give him a quest. He accepted it without another thought. Another prompt appeared. You have unlocked a new field of study, astrology. If only Miss Cleo were here, Richter thought, then he'd know everything he needed about that field of study. She could also teach him about tax evasion and fake accents. I'll take care of it, Crom, but it might mean having some gnomes wandering around the forge. They'll most likely need to study the ceiling. Crom's face darkened. He prepared to protest, but Richter cut him off. Do you want to understand the forge or not? What would the real Rhea do if you ignored her needs? The smith immediately hunched, as if to protect his middle.
You're right, your lordship. I guess I can deal with it if there only be one at a time.
Foreseeing a potential future issue, Richter decided to nip it in the bud. More than one may need to be here at one time, Crom. You need to be okay with up to four.
Four? Four? My speckled arse, I will have four of those buggers in the forge. Two. Two is all I can take.
Two, then. But you have to be helpful. Richter smirked on the inside and couldn't resist twisting the knife. You also have to be nice. Crom looked almost apoplectic. Richter added, "We could always just set aside some dedicated time for the gnomes to be in here without you."
"Banished gods, no! I absolutely refuse, your lordship. I will be..."
Crom's mouth twisted as if he were chewing sour glass.
"Nice."
"Good," Richter said. "Make sure the other smiths are as well. Understand that if I have to come over here to deal with silly complaints myself, I will not be happy." Richter clipped each of the last words as he said them. "Are we clear, Smith?" Crom, who had seen Richter's steely disposition when he accepted the job as village smith, definitely saw the merits of keeping his lord happy.
"I will keep these knuckle-draggers in line, your lordship."
"I knew I could count on you, Crom," Richter said jovially, clapping the man on the shoulder. "Now, do you have any other toys for me, or should we just get to business?" Before answering, Crom grew serious.
"Aye, your lordship. Before I show you, though, I wanted to say one thing. Your blade should show you the power of having such a wonder as the Forge of Heavens. I just wanted to say that I take the honor seriously. I am with you till death, your lordship."
Richter held out his hand until Crom reached out too, and the men clasped wrists. The smith's fingers were rough and his grip sure. "I know you take it seriously, Crom. I am lucky to have your service. When you make these weapons, you are saving the lives of your fellow villagers. This is your home for as long as I breathe." They released their shake and Crom coughed, somewhat embarrassed.
"Well, I do have one or two more things to show you, my lord."
First, he tossed Richter a small piece of flat and thick marbled quartz.
"You'll be needing that. Any softer stone will be cut right through when you try to sharpen your blade."
Then he walked over to another stand and took down a quiver of arrows.
"I thought you might be able to do some damage with these. All we had left were the basic soul stones from the hunters, though, so the enchantment came out weaker than it could have."
"You have been given Moonstone Arrows of Freezing, quantity 60, damage plus 9, durability 158 of 158, item class Uncommon, quality Superb, weight 0.8 kilograms, traits, plus 3 to 4 points of water damage per attack, 2% chance to cause freeze, plus 10% damage versus spell barriers." The arrows had an insane amount of stopping power. Once again, it came from using higher-grade materials and having a quality smith to do the work. It was true that using moonstone to make arrowheads was expensive. It was almost like using silver to make bullets, but then again, Richter was pretty sure that werewolf hunters would agree that was a good idea as well. "How did you enchant all of these?" Richter asked. He was thoroughly pleased. "I didn't give you that many soul stones."
"That was no problem, your lordship. The arrowheads are so small, you can enchant them in lots of 10. I have to warn you, though. I'd be almost out of powdered crystal. If you want more enchanted weapons and armor, you will need to get me more."
"It won't be a problem," Richter assured him. Then he went back to gushing over his new arrows. "This is amazing, Crom. Thank you. That reminds me, though. Can you do anything with this?" Richter reached into his bag and pulled out the schematic for the heavy arrows. Crom greedily took the diagram and rushed over to a wooden table. He smoothed out the large parchment and began poring over it.
"Yes. See, I always thought that the counterweight..."
Crom muttered to himself for a full 2 minutes. That was the extent of Richter's patience.
"Crom, can you make these or not?" he asked.
The dwarf looked up.
"I think so. Yes. Yes, I can make them. Just going to take a little trial and error. Thank you for giving me this, my lord. Give me a week. Learning to make these will increase my smithing skill a lot more than just swinging a hammer. Can I hold on to this?"
A prompt appeared in his vision. Return to Smith Crom in 1 week to see if he has learned the creation of heavy arrows. Richter dismissed the notification and nodded. Just make sure that you get it to one of the scribes when you have figured it out. Tell them to make a copy and then give both to the Chamberlain, okay? Crom nodded. He weighted down two of the parchment edges with daggers he took from a nearby stand. From the longing glances he cast at the diagram, Richter was sure the smith would be back to poring over it the moment he was alone again.
I do have one other thing to show you, my lord.
Crom walked over to another table and reached underneath. He pulled a chest out and lifted the lid. Inside was a collection of white, hand-sized scales. The Skeeling scales. Haven't made much progress, huh? Richter asked.
More than you think, my lord. Each scale has been scraped clean. Each also has small holes drilled to link them together and have been treated with a resin that will keep them strong yet supple. You've done everything short of making the actual armor, but it be completely planned out. It'd be a good thing we measured you before. It will take longer, but there will be a boost to defense.
So why haven't you made it yet? Richter asked, confused.
I believe these scales will make something special, my lord. Because of that, they not only need to be forged well, they need to be enchanted well. I know it not be easy, but we need more soul stones with strong souls. It also would be a good idea to place more armor enchantments into the forge. If you do that, I can make you an amazing set of armor.
You have been offered a quest, the Spirit of Defense. Crom wants to make you an amazing set of armor, but he needs more soul stones. Will you obtain them? Obviously, luminous level stones will give you a better yield. Optional. Place new armor enchantments in the Forge of Heavens. Yes or no? Reward, a new set of armor. Of course, Richter said. He chose the yes prompt.
Just let me know when you're ready to start on the armor. Will that be all I have for you so far, your lordship? Much of our time be spent making arms and armor for the new militia.
This is more than enough, Crom. Thank you. I've seen the new gear the militia is wearing, and I want to congratulate you on a job well done. The dwarf's chest swelled up with pride. I need to ask something else of you, though. The hunters need better weapons and armor if they are going to keep going outside of the walls. Can you make sure they are equipped with what they need?
That will not be a problem, your lordship. Do you want me to wait until we have more soul stones?
Richter thought about it for a moment. No. In addition to the meat they bring in, they are invaluable as scouts. Just equip them as fast as you can. I'm not letting them be on the walls until you do. Find them during the feast and set up a time for them to meet with you. I'm going to send Basil to speak with you about his diplomatic mission with the Serrated Mountain Dwarves, too. He is going to need as much information as you can provide. Actually, now that I'm thinking about it, should you go with him? Crom's face immediately clouded.
I cannot leave now, your lordship. I just learned my new enchantment. I know I will learn the other one soon. I can feel it.
Richter raised his hands placatingly. Okay. I do think someone should go with him, though. Preferably two someones. Are there any dwarves here that you trust to guide Basil's party and act as a liaison? Crom scratched his beard.
I might know just the dwarves. Me second cousin and his friend. They're young, barely 30, and still more balls than brains. They have been spoiling to go exploring and wouldn't mind a bit of an adventure. It'd be a good idea for Basil to have a guide. There are more than dwarf tribes in the mountains. More than one goblin and orc clan call the mountains their home.
Richter nodded grimly. He would have to increase the number of guards that he sent with Basil. He felt much better knowing that Crom would pick a good guide for the man. He thanked the smith and said, Now I have to go. I still have a few stops to make before I go hunting. Keep up the good work. Richter had turned and started walking away when he heard,
Your lordship, there was one more thing.
Richter was honestly starting to get a bit annoyed. It was starting to feel like he was being pulled in 20 different directions. He quelled his aggravation, though, and just turned back with a serene expression. What do you need, Crom?
It's about the iron mine, my lord. Some of the dwarves and the human miners have been gradually going deeper. A few days ago, one reported that he heard some noises coming from lower in the shaft. Since then, the other miners have been reporting hearing the same type of noises. They say it sounds like a child laughing. Well, I told them to toughen up and get back to work, but they will only work the areas closer to the surface now. The iron veins that close to the entrance were the first that we stripped, though, so iron production be slowing down. I thought you might be able to investigate and put their minds at ease.
Wait for it, Richter thought. A notification popped into his view. There it is! You have been offered a quest, Noises in the Dark 1. Your miners have heard sounds like a child's laughter in the iron mine. It is unnerving them and slowing down productivity. Crom wants you to investigate the mine and ensure that there is no danger. Reward, access to the next level of the mine. Your iron production will resume normal levels, yes or no?
I'll take care of it, Crom. I knew you would, your lordship.
Some of the other dwarves had stopped in their tasks when the smith had asked about the iron mine. Seeing that, Crom's voice boomed out,
Get back to work, you lazy slugs!
Everyone in the forge hopped too. Crom continued his tirade to make sure they kept at it. Richter took the opportunity to retreat. As he was leaving, he told Crom to take a look at the weapons and armor he had placed in the armory and to bring it all back up to full durability. The dwarf grunted and nodded. As Richter left the forge, he set his sights on the meadow to the north of the village. He felt a longing to see the celestial tree. The silver wood and velvety white leaves brought a sense of tranquility to all who observed it. After the horror and stress of the last week, Richter could use a little inner peace. Chapter 4, Day 102, Kuralt 21, 15,368 EBG. Richter walked out of the forge and looked around, but unfortunately, there was still no sign of Sion and Futin. Figuring they would catch up, he went on to his next errand. The remnant always seemed to know where he was, anyway. While he was walking to the slope that would lead him to the meadow, sure enough, Futin floated up with Sion strolling behind him. He told the remnant about his new quests so they could be passed along to Randolphus, then turned to see his friend.
"Piss off any more rock giants?" Sion asked with a mocking grin.
"Well, that depends," Richter answered with a speculative gaze upward. "Giants compared to me? Or to you?"
His grin was just as shit-eating as his companion's.
"Oh, Richter," Sion said without missing a beat. "You will never compare to my giant."
The sprite patted his crotch.
"Now, why did you have to make it weird?" Richter complained.
"It's not my fault that I recently saw you naked. Raw chaos must be really, really cold."
"I'm a grower, not a shower, man.
Just ask Daniela," Richter said offhandedly.
"Daniela?" Sion said, sounding confused. "Shouldn't I just ask the cows and the sheep?"
"Enough!" Richter said with a laugh. "It is good to see you, my friend."
He reached out his arm.
Sion clasped wrists with him.
"Always, my friend. Now why did you have your magic ball bring me?"
"We have hunting to do. The lands around the village are getting more dangerous. Tirad wants to do some scouting before the feast. I'm assuming you're up for a little action."
Sion twisted his neck and a loud crack sounded.
"That is an understatement, my friend." His expression grew serious.
"I feel horrible that the assassin was able to harm you."
Richter stopped walking.
"That wasn't your fault, Sion."
The sprite looked up into Richter's face and met his gaze.
"I am your companion, but even more than that, I am your brother. I feel great shame that I did not protect you. It should have been me and not Tirad that started instituting greater security in the village. If I had, you might not have died. Will you forgive me?"
Richter saw the earnestness in his friend's eyes. He realized that more protestations would only insult him and waste time.
"I forgive you, but only if you will forgive me for my selfishness. I've been walking around the village, and it seems like everyone that I meet needs something. I've come to realize that these are all things that I should have been making more of a priority before now. I have been too focused on my personal needs when I should have been paying attention to my responsibilities as a leader. I am sure that I have also been ignoring my responsibilities as a friend."
A silence grew between the two men.
We have a deal,
Sion said. Good, Richter said. Don't wait so long to answer next time, though. Having to look you in the face for so long, now that deserves an apology.
I could paint my face to look like a pig's behind if that helps. I know that's the view you're used to,
Sion quipped back. Really, dude? Another animal sex joke? You're better than that. The two friends kept up a running train of friendly insults as they climbed the slope to the meadow and just enjoyed each other's company. It was a camaraderie born of battle and sacrifice. Richter did not have many friends in the land, but what he lacked in quantity, he knew he made up for in quality. When they got to the top, they could see a large, tilled field. The last time Richter had been up here, the herb garden had just been, well, a garden. Now it was at least 5 times larger. 3 elves and a human female were tending it now. The original garden was showing some great growth. Plants of many different colors were sprouting up in various spots. The new sections still just looked like furrowed ground. As he watched, one of the men ran string between 2 small poles that stuck straight up from the ground. Richter could see that a loose grid system had already been started. He guessed it was to separate the different types of herbs that had been planted. As the two companions walked up, one of the elves stood and started running towards them. It was Isabella, Tarad's love. She didn't slow down when she got close, but instead threw herself into his arms and held him close in a fierce hug.
My lord, you did it! You brought my love back to me! From this day forward, you have my devotion and support. Will you accept my pledge?
Richter shifted uncomfortably. Not because of the emotion she was conveying, but instead because her lovely lady lumps were causing a certain reaction. He tried to extricate himself from her grasp, but it just made her hold him tighter.
Please do not refuse my pledge, my lord. My honor will not allow for anything less. I must serve you.
Richter didn't know what was happening. It seemed like Sion and the other gardeners completely understood his predicament and were immensely enjoying the show, but Isabella was completely focused on getting Richter to agree. He tried gently pushing her off again, but she would not take the hint. She held him close, and the problem got worse. Now there was friction. Okay, okay, I accept your pledge. You have rescued the true love of Isabella. Because of this, she is loyal to you unto death and has offered you her fealty. Her beauty and her mind are now devoted to your rule. Lead well. Congratulations. You have gained 37,250 relationship points with Isabella. Your relationship with Isabella has improved from friendly, plus 1,000, to trusted, plus 35,000. Your word is good enough for me. Total relationship points with Isabella, plus 32,562. She relaxed her death grip and looked him in the eye.
Thank you, my lord.
Isabella went into a deep curtsy and then looked up at him with sweet and happy eyes. He reached out to help her up from her curtsy. She smiled brightly and then turned away to help the other gardeners. Wanting to diffuse any sexual tension, he reached out to clap her on the shoulder. To his surprise, as soon as she felt his touch, she shied away. Until this moment, Richter hadn't really had any real interaction with Isabella. From the time that he had saved her from Count Stonek, she had been in seclusion. He was finally seeing her as a person, though, and not just a damaged victim. It was easy to see how Tarad had fallen in love with the elf maiden. She was an obvious beauty, with her chestnut hair and dusky brown skin. Her eyes were also captivating, being the shining gold of the setting sun. More than the physical, however, Isabella clearly had a gentle and genuine spirit. This was the creature that Count Stonek had abused physically, mentally, and emotionally. She had healed emotionally to the extent that she had been able to embrace him, but unexpected contact still made her flinch. The Count had hurt her deeply. Richter reaffirmed his resolve to deal with the man in kind once he had dealt with the threat of the bugbears. He took a step back from the wood elf and just extended his hand, letting her come to him. Isabella had recovered from her involuntary recoil and had a slightly pained and embarrassed expression on her face. She firmed her lips, took a step forward, and placed her hand in his.
I'm sorry for my reaction, my lord. I know that I owe you for my freedom. I can never repay you for that, or for saving my love.
Richter loosely held her hand, making sure that she did not feel trapped. I have heard what you have done for me, rallying the villagers. You take whatever time you need to heal. With that in mind, I would like to give you a gift. I must touch you to do so, however. Are you okay with that? Isabella's body tightened perceptibly. It was quiet in the meadow as the four bystanders witnessed the interplay between the wood elf and the lord of the mist village. Richter didn't make any move as her hand quivered inside of his. He sensed this was a pivotal moment for her. When she had seen him initially, she had clearly been overcome with emotion and a need to express her thanks. That was most likely why she had been able to hug him like that. Now, though, he was asking her to consciously allow a man to lay hands on her again. Richter just waited for her decision. Several long breaths later, her hand stilled and she nodded.
I trust you, my lord.
Richter smiled comfortingly and placed one hand on her chest above her breasts and the other on her head. His power made his senses come alive as it sensed his intent. Words spilled from his mouth, heavy with the gravity of the moment. By the right of my power, I awaken your power. Warmth blossomed in his chest. Images flashed through Richter's mind, and each brought a warm emotion with it, holding his nephew for the first time, and then feeling the warmth of the sun on his face. Then something he could not possibly have remembered, but still knew was a true memory. He remembered his mother holding him as a baby and looking into her face for the first time. All of these memories and emotions suffused his very soul in the space of a single heartbeat. Then he felt the warmth in his chest spread down either arm and flow into Isabella. There was another breathless moment while both Isabella and Richter waited to see what would happen, but then they felt it. The resonance. He didn't know if the life magic found a home in her soul or if the life magic inside of her had just finally awoken. Either way, a new life mage had been born. Isabella had seen Richter awaken the air mages several weeks ago, but it in no way prepared her for the exhilaration of magic coursing through her. She felt as if a part of her that had always been asleep, a part of her that she had never even known existed, was now singing out its birth to the world. The spiritual scars she had sustained during captivity would never leave her, and some of her emotional wounds were still healing. But now, some of the darker parts of her spirit were being bathed in the healing light of her new life magic. A smile bloomed on her face. Isabella spoke in a calm voice. Richter heard a surety in her tone that had been lacking before.
Thank you, my lord.
Mere moments after accepting her pledge of fealty, you will fulfill your promise to Isabella. As your power rises, so has her own. She now has access to the power of life and will use it to heal your wounds and fight your battles. You have found a new ally. Your enemies will become my enemies. They shall fall before us. Congratulations. You have gained plus 80,000 relationship points with Isabella. Your relationship with Isabella has improved from trusted, plus 35,000, to ally, plus 100,000. Your word is enough for me. Total relationship points with Isabella, plus 112,562. Richter smiled happily. It just felt right somehow that the life magic had found a home within her. You're welcome, Isabella. What spell did you learn? Isabella's eyes lost focus for a moment, and then she answered excitedly,
I learned three spells, my lord.
Three? He asked, surprised. Your affinity must be high. What is it?
100%,
she answered, delighted. Well, what spells did you learn? He asked again.
Detect life, Virul's blessing, and weak slow heal. I don't know what I want to try first.
Richter laughed. The woman had undergone a transformation. Well, what does Virul's blessing do?
It increases the yield of growing plants. The spell can be cast once per day, but the casts are cumulative. Each time I invoke the spell, the final growth and potency will increase by 5% for a max of 100%.
Richter wondered at the unknown rules of the land. That spell sounded like exactly what an herb gatherer would need.
Did she get the spell because of her skill in herb lore, or did her skills in herb lore and life magic both stem from something intrinsic to who and what she was? The line of questioning was probably about as useful as chicken or the egg, Richter realized. He decided just to be happy for his new life disciple. I want you to learn what I know as well. Richter placed his hands on her head and chest again. Her pupils dilated, and she knew. He was able to teach her Weak Charm and Soul Trap. His other spells required a higher level in life magic than her current skill level of 1. She thanked him profusely again and hugged him. There was no hesitation this time. He looked at the other gardeners who had stood silently by watching and decided not to waste a good PR opportunity. Your loyalty and fealty are not taken lightly, Isabella. I stand by my first pledge that as I rise, you will rise as well. He looked at the 3 villagers and clearly saw that his words had taken root inside of them. With any luck, they would spread this story during the feast tonight. Even if it only convinced 1 more person to swear fealty, it would have been well worth the effort. They all just stood there for a few seconds. Richter still wanted to go check on the quickening, but had a feeling that as soon as he started walking away, someone would speak up and ask him for something. He decided to nip it in the bud. Isabella? She looked at him. Is there anything else that I can do to help you?
Well, my lord, now that you mention it...
She kept talking, and he got a new quest. You have been offered a quest. If it grows from the ground, it's probably okay, 1. Your herb gatherers are working hard to supply the needs of your burgeoning village. They need a structure to dry and treat the plants that they harvest, however. Isabella requests that you build an herb shed. Bonus will be provided if you select a location suitable for both light-needing and dark-needing plants. Reward increased potency of herbs. Yes or no? Richter accepted the quest. I'll talk to Roswan about it, but you may need to wait a bit. There are a lot of other things we need to build first. She assured him there wasn't a major rush. The first batch of herbs would not finish growing for a while, and those could be hung up in the longhouses. Richter nodded and then started walking towards the quickening with Sion in tow. Alma had gotten enough of a rest, apparently, and flew off towards the village below. Futin floated behind them silently. Before Richter had taken more than a few steps, he heard chanting. Isabella was looking at the tilled herb field and had both hands extended out. She spoke in a smooth, measured voice, and gold light suffused her arms. As Richter watched, she moved them sinuously. Her movements matched the cadence of her voice perfectly. Apparently, her spell had a relatively long cast time, but for a potential doubling in herb yield and potency, Richter knew it was worth the effort. He turned away again and left Isabella to explore her new power. A short walk later, the 2 friends were standing under the canopy of the quickening. The 2 sprite guards had greeted them before fading back into concealment. The thick white leaves shifted above them, causing a faint rustling as they rubbed together. The silver bark shone faintly in the scant light that filtered through the foliage. Richter and Sion kept walking until they were directly in front of the trunk. It almost looked like 8 different trees that had been woven into a complex helical shape. Richter ran his hand over the smooth wood. The surface of the quickening was not wrinkled like an oak tree. Instead, it was covered in smooth whorls that were artistic in appearance. Richter closed his eyes and stood there for a full 5 minutes. Every breath in filled his mind and soul with contentment. Every breath out exhaled a small amount of tension. Richter kept one hand on the tree in a simple communion. Sion shared this sacred space with his friend. The wood sprite, like all of his people, had an almost religious reverence for nature. Being able to see and stand beneath a heavenly tree was a dream made reality for his companion. Richter opened his eyes. The residual stress of the past week was still there, but it felt distant now. Sion looked at him and smiled. The sprite also felt the same oneness of spirit. Richter peeked through the gaps in the trunk and looked at the cocoon within. Alora's chrysalis was spun of silver thread that matched the trunk. He silently wished her well. He took a step back and exhaled in contentment.
Sion turned to leave, but stopped when Richter touched his arm. The sprite looked back with a questioning expression.
I know this is a somewhat sensitive topic, but you are my best friend. The list of my enemies is only growing longer and more distinguished. I want to give you every weapon and advantage that I can. With that in mind, I would like to try and awaken life magic in you.
Sion shook his head and his face adopted a slightly pained expression.
My mother has tried, Richter. Sumiko has tried. Other life masters have tried. It has never worked.
Though Sion tried to stay even-keeled while he spoke, the volume of his voice rose ever so slightly by the end.
Richter didn't interrupt.
He knew what a sensitive subject this was for his friend. Being the son of the Hearth Mother and yet living most of his life thinking he was magically barren had taken a serious toll on Sion. The sprite had been able to shed most of that emotional weight once he had learned air magic, but no one could easily forget decades of shame, even if it was about something beyond your control.
I know, Sion, and I don't bring this up lightly. You were present at the birth of the Quickening, though. Your mother said that the amount of new air disciples I was able to make was unheard of. She said it was because they were exposed to the magic released when the tree was birthed. It increased the affinities of the villagers and let me awaken their power. Now, I don't know if this will work, but I would like to try.
Sion took a deep breath and then stepped close.
Okay, he said heavily. Let's try.
Richter placed his left hand on his friend's head and the right on Sion's chest. Warmth blossomed inside of his chest and the sensation flowed down both arms. The energy flowed into Sion, searching for a resonance. The two men locked eyes and waited, but nothing happened. The energy dissipated like smoke in the wind. Richter's face crumpled somewhat in sympathy. What he had said was true. He did want Sion to be as prepared as possible for the inevitable fights to come, but he had had another, deeper motivation.
Richter had wanted to give his friend a gift. Not just the gift of magic, but also the gift of freedom from any lingering doubts as to his own self-worth.
Sion didn't let him dwell. With a bit of forced joviality in his voice, the sprite said,
Maybe you should get a woman. This is an absolutely pathetic attempt to get a little affection.
He stepped away, breaking the contact between them. The sprite started walking away. Richter fell in step behind him. In an effort to help Sion move past the disappointment, he said,
Well, you can't blame a guy for trying. At least I got you alone first.
Sion gave a half-hearted laugh. The two men walked out from under the comforting embrace of the Quickening. Despite Richter's failed attempt to awaken Sion's life magic, their time with the Celestial Tree was not wasted. For both of them, the world seemed a bit brighter and the future a bit more hopeful. Once the sun was shining directly on their faces again, Sion seemed back to himself. He smiled brightly, just enjoying being alive. Richter smiled back, happy that the awkward moment had passed. He started walking south, intending to go back down the hill to the village, but Sion stopped him.
What's up? He asked the sprite.
There is something that I want to show you. It's on the far end of the meadow.
Richter nodded, but looked up at where Futon floated above his head.
How much time has passed since I finished speaking to Tirad?
1 hour and 22 minutes,
came the monotone reply.
Okay, we should have enough time, but let's run.
Richter spoke a word of power. One hand moved in a particular gesture as he cast weak haste. Suddenly, the world seemed to move somewhat slower, and he, conversely, could move that much faster. Sion did the same, and the two men took off at a run. The sprite led the way, and they quickly moved to the west. Richter thought they might have been running to the lake, but Sion started veering north towards the cliff face. They ran for another minute or two and then stopped before a waterfall. The water fell from the cliffs high above and filled the lake that dominated the western aspect of the meadow. A second waterfall fell from the south side of the lake down to the level of the village. Richter realized that he had never actually come all the way to the western edge of the meadow before. He looked up at the river feeding the lake and wondered if the torrent of water came from a stream or river that wended its way through mountains to the north. The spray falling over the two companions was certainly icy cold.
"So this is what you wanted to show me?" Richter shouted.
This close to the site of the impact, the waterfall was quite loud.
No, Gyoti! Sion shouted back. I have been searching around the village and the surrounding area. That includes this meadow. I was searching for a particular herb, white rind tendril, that is known to grow on rocks near running water. I was scaling the rocks near the waterfall, doing my best not to fall. That was not easy, by the way. The water covers the rocks completely where I was searching, and it made enough froth that I couldn't see my hands when they were in the flow.
Richter rolled his eyes a bit over this slightly long and boring story. Sion glared at him, but continued.
As I was saying, I was making my way across a series of rocks hidden by the water. Things were going fine, but then I put my hand down through the water again, but I couldn't find a handhold. There wasn't anything there. I peeked my head through and found the cave. Now come on!
Sion smiled wildly and then started walking on the rocks that crossed in front of the falls. Richter followed him until they had gone about 20 feet. They were both drenched by the spray before they had even made it half that distance. The large rocks at the bottom of the falls were slippery, but both men had more than enough agility to navigate the path. Sion got right up to the wall of water and motioned for Richter to follow him.
This way!
The sprite stepped through the torrent and disappeared. Shaking his head at how intensely cold the water was likely to be, Richter stepped through as well. He had thought he was wet before, but the deluge falling on him made him feel like he was diving into the ocean, near Antarctica. The force of the water threatened to push him off balance, but again, he was able to keep his feet. He was effectively blinded by the sheer volume of the water falling on him, but he kept pushing forward. For a second, Richter started wondering if this was all an elaborate trick by his companion, but then a small, strong hand grabbed his wrist and pulled him towards the rock face behind the falls. Richter stumbled through the water, and his foot found a slick gravel floor. The volume of water blocked out almost all of the afternoon light, but Futin floated in and illuminated the space. The entrance to the cave was only 3 feet across and 10 feet high. Compared to the 40-foot width of the falls, the entrance was quite small. Richter looked around. The cave opened up widely after the narrow opening. Moss-covered rocks lay near the entrance, and large stalactites hung from the ceiling. He hadn't known what to expect, but what he saw was more than a simple cave. The moisture from the falls apparently made the perfect environment for fungus. In Futin's light, Richter could see lichen of varying shades and textures hugging most available surfaces. Sion was already running around like a kid in a candy store, examining them and exclaiming over the properties each could convey.
"You were here before, weren't you?"
Richter asked, amused by his friend's oohs and ahs. "Yes, but I just discovered it a day ago. I could also barely see. Only a small amount of light filters through the water on the falls."
Richter nodded and kept looking around. The ceiling rose to 15 feet above his head, and the cave he was standing in extended back another 100 feet. A small break in the ceiling allowed a cascade of water to fall through. Richter couldn't see any sky through the fissure in the ceiling, but he felt it was safe to assume that the water came from the waterfall running above their heads. It fell into a small wading pool that in turn made a small rivulet that ran down the center of the cave until it flowed out towards the entrance. Futin's light reflected weakly off of the white marbled quartz. The scene was one of untouched beauty. He realized that this might indeed be an ideal place to plant his garden. It was well hidden, which could come in handy. The villagers would most likely know, of course. Something like a crystal garden couldn't be kept secret in a village like this. Once one villager found out, gossip would ensure the rest would know soon after. It would keep the garden secret from invaders, however, and that might be invaluable. If they were raided again, it was unlikely any enemies would make it to the meadow and then have the foresight to explore the waterfall. He did not forget that his quest had specified that darkness was preferred when he planted the focus crystal, though. The light entering the cave was weak, but he wondered if he might find a place of complete darkness further in. He left Sion to keep examining the cave's flora and walked to the back of the cave. Richter hoped to find the most shadowed corner, but to his delight, he found much more.
A shadowy recess that he had taken to just be a fold in the cave wall actually turned out to be the start of a small tunnel. He ordered Futin to dim his light and stay with Sion, then he cast Dark Vision 1. Futin's dim light and the small amount of sun that filtered through the water was somewhat painful, but as the remnant floated away, it became manageable. Richter walked through the tunnel, which quickly narrowed in both width and height. In 6 steps, Richter was hunched over. 4 more, and he was in a 3-point stance as he edged forward. The slope of the floor also increased to a 45-degree angle. 5 more steps, and a turn of the tunnel later, a bare wall confronted Richter. The path didn't end, though. Directly above him was a hole with irregular edges. Just by standing in the shortened tunnel, he was able to get his head and shoulders above the edges of the hole. Richter looked out at a large cavern that was in complete darkness. It extended past the 25-yard range that his Dark Vision 1 spell allowed. He didn't see any other light, though. This might be just what he was looking for. Richter gave a small internal cheer at having found the perfect space to grow his crystal garden. That was, of course, right when the tentacle grabbed him.
Chapter 5, Day 102, Kuralt 21, 15,368 EBG. Richter was yanked up through the hole. The tentacle had looped under one arm and around his neck, giving whatever had him a firm grasp. It whipped his body back and forth in the air before throwing him across the pitch-black cavern. He gave a startled shout as he flew through the air. He landed heavily but quickly got to his feet. He anxiously looked in all directions, but didn't see anything. A loud crash echoed through the cavern. He dismissed Dark Vision 1, and then, with both hands, started casting Far Light. Every second, 2 balls of light would shoot into the darkness and affix to whatever they struck. Richter aimed at the ceiling, the far walls, and the floor. He turned in all directions, his hands glowing gold in a vain attempt to see what had attacked him, but still he saw nothing. He didn't stop. Each ball of light cost him 5 mana, but that wasn't a problem, as he could draw on the village's mana pool. Richter kept turning. He wished that he knew which direction the entrance to the cavern was, but between being shaken in the air and then spinning after he had been thrown, he was completely turned around. He accessed his map, but all it showed was a black space surrounding him. The cave entrance was roughly to his right, but that was all he could tell, so he did the only thing he could. He kept casting. 10 balls of light shot out. Then there were 30, and then 100. Richter kept turning, trying to look in all directions at once. Despite his preparations, something struck him, and he didn't see it coming. He took a heavy blow across his shoulders that knocked him off his feet. His armor absorbed most of the damage, but he still lost 12 health. He fell on his face, and before he could turn over, something wrapped around his left leg. It began pulling him across the floor to a patch of darkness that lacked a ball of far light. Richter cried out in panic and anger. Flopping over, he put both hands together and dual cast Weak Flame. He forced a word of power from his throat, and his wrists locked together. A gout of orange fire flew ahead of him and began to cook the tentacle that held him. It was dark black in color and thick like an octopus's arm. When the fire touched it, he heard a scream that sounded like the whistling of wind through a canyon. The tentacle loosed its grip. As it retreated, Richter was horrified to see that the wiry limb was lined with suckers. That was not noteworthy, but each sucker had a small mouth in its center that was full of needle-like teeth. The mouths snapped and gnashed at him in no observable sequence. He kept up his fire attack and traced the lance of flame in the direction of the retreating tentacle. The scream grew louder, and Richter got his first look at what was attacking him. He used Analyze. Dark Aberration. Level 18, health 630, mana 350, stamina 410, disposition hatred. A dark aberration can arise from the remains of sacrificial victims used in dark magic.
The rotting flesh of those poor souls will sometimes flow together to create this horrid creature. An amalgam of agony, fury, and dark magic, an aberration is filled with hatred and will attack any creature that comes near it. Rather than being seen as an unfortunate consequence of magic experimentation, some evil wizards have sacrificed hundreds, if not thousands, of men, women, and children for the express purpose of creating these hateful things. A dark aberration can lie dormant for years and can survive by feeding off of the residual dark magic that created it. If it is supplied with fresh flesh or dark energy, this monster could theoretically be an immortal watchdog.
The thing was huge. It was at least the size of a Humvee. The entire body of the aberration just looked like a tarry black mass that had a forest of tentacles extending out from it. Eyes of various colors and types were randomly placed on the body, and several large mouths were screaming in concert. Some of the mouths were as long as Richter's arm and filled with jagged, shark-like teeth. But one mouth was human-sized and was lined with full, red, pouting lips. Somehow the normal mouth was what really filled Richter with revulsion. He only got a look at it for a second because it quickly scooted farther back into the cave and beyond the range of his weak flame spell. Richter immediately lost sight of it, and the screams quieted after a few seconds. Except for the whoosh of his fire spell and his own harsh breathing, there wasn't another sound to be heard once it disappeared into the dark. Just great, Richter thought. This thing is a fucking ninja! He screamed defiance at it for a second and maintained his fire attack, but then cut it off and sprinted in the opposite direction. As Richter ran, he started casting buffs. Weak life armor, weak life aura, weak haste, and bark skin. He even cast Courage 1, though he couldn't tell if it had an effect. He was still scared shitless by what he had just seen. That thing had been huge, and he was pretty sure one of those eyes had winked at him. As he sprinted away, he downed 2 mana potions. Richter aimed his run towards an area that seemed to have a greater concentration of his far light balls clustered together, reasoning that had to be the direction he had been thrown from. It also coincided with the section of the map where the cave entrance was. Luckily, it was roughly opposite of the direction that the aberration had skittered off in. Richter intellectually understood that didn't mean it wasn't still following him in the dark, or even that it hadn't managed to get ahead of him, but seeing as how he was running for his life from a giant tentacle monster, it really didn't seem like the time for deep thoughts. It didn't take more than a few seconds to cast his buffs, and after that, he just cast far light in all directions again until he reached the portion of wall that was already festooned with his balls of light. His breath was still coming fast and short, and his heart thudded forcefully in his chest. He quickly turned around, placing his back to the wall, and drew his new sword. It gleamed green in the light of Richter's balls of light. With his other hand, he took 2 mana potions from his bag and downed them. He looked out over the cavern, searching for the aberration. The first thing that struck Richter was the strangeness of the cavern he was in. The ceiling was only 20 feet directly above his head, but in front of him, the cave became a warren of holes and short tunnels. To Richter, it looked like staring into a block of Swiss cheese. There was even a 4-foot hole leading directly up into the ceiling, only a few feet from where he was standing. Richter quailed internally when he realized he was standing in a 3-dimensional maze. He could only hope that he had run in the right direction, and that he could find the way out. It was now abundantly clear why the position of the far light balls was so confusing. Richter looked around, searching for the midnight black body of his attacker, but he didn't see anything. He shot out a few more balls of far light, but each ball of light only illuminated the space around it for a few feet. The oil-colored body of his enemy could be in any of the seemingly endless shadows that were in front of him. Richter looked to either side, trying to find the entrance to the chamber. He sidled a bit to the left, but then whipped his head back to the right, fearing to be attacked from the darkness again. Richter took stock of his situation. Just like when he had been confronted with a difficult situation on Earth, he remembered the wisdom of Frank Herbert. "Fear is the mind killer. I will face my fear. I will let it pass through me." Richter took a deep breath and steadied himself. With his short sword held before him, he faced the facts. Fact. A monster wanted his life. Fact. If he didn't escape, he would have to fight for his life. Fact. It was bigger than him. Richter's fear faded as he forced his mind to confront his situation.